Welcome back to Pertaining to People, a podcast about all things anthropology and archaeology. We are your hosts, Jill,
Lulu,
and Kelsey,
three female anthropologists. And so today we are going to talk about some women in anthropology, because after this, we're going to be releasing some interviews that we've done with some amazing women in anthropology set up by our lovely Kelsey. Do you want to talk about them at all?
Sure. We conducted these interviews to inform about potential careers in archaeology and to just sit and chat with some women who have pursued different careers in archaeology, from the diverse sectors of the government to museums to starting their own consulting CRM firm. So we are very excited to hear from the unique perspectives and journeys of all of these women on their various career paths.
Super excited. Yeah. And so those will be obviously current women in anthropology. And so we're going to talk about just a couple from history and also current. And, you know, we often hear about female anthropologists such as Diane Fossey, Mary Leakey, and Gertrude Bell. But we wanted to talk about some known and not so known female anthropologists. Yeah, so I focused on the anthropologist Margareta Papakura. And so she's known by a couple different names. And so she was born Margaret Pattison Tom, and she was born in 1872 or 73. Yeah, on Wikipedia it says she was born on October 20th, 1873, but then yeah, in the Oxford Companion to New Zealand Literature, it says 1872, so sometime she was born. And she was born in Matata, Bay of Plenty, New Zealand. And her parents were William Arthur Tom, who was a British man, and Pia Ngarotu Te Rihi, who was a Te Arawa woman of the Ngati Wahiao Hapu of Tuhurangi. And she was a descendant of Te Arawa chiefs and a member of the Rangatira class, also known as she really married down by marrying this random British man. She was a very well distinguished woman, but she married this man, and then they had Margaret, Maggie, or Macaretti. And I didn't know this. So Te Arawa is a confederation of Maori, Iwi, and Hapu tribes and subtribes of New Zealand who trace their ancestry to the Arawa migration canoe, Waka. And so Margareta or Maggie was raised by her aunt and uncle until the age of 10 in the Parakaranga village, speaking Maori and learning her mother's family's history, culture, and traditions. And then after the age of 10, her father took over her education, and she attended various schools, including the Hukerere native schools for girls. She got married at the age of 18 to a surveyor named Francis Denon, and they had a son later that year. And Francis was kind of a deadbeat dad, and after living together for a while, he left for Taupo, and Margareta returned to, please excuse my pronunciation, but Wakarewarewa. And they actually got divorced 9 years later in 1900. And so after schooling, she began to guide under another guide, Sophia Hinarangi, who is also of Maori descent. And then she often went by the English name Maggie. And the story goes that a tourist asked her her second name, and she kind of looked around and she saw the Papakura geyser nearby. And from then on, she just said that that was her last name. So she often went by Maggie Papakura as a guide. And then in 1901, the Duke and Duchess of Cornwall and York visited Wakarewarewa, and she worked as their guide. And because of this, she became known, and she was in the press and such. And as a result of that, she was featured in magazines, calendars, brochures, books, postcards, and newspaper society columns. And so there's a lot of photos of her doing different things. There's some really beautiful photos, and she's really beautiful. And they're really cool to see. So after working as a guide for a while, in 1903, she published her first book, which was Maggie's Guide to the Hot Lakes, which was really popular, sold really well. And she was also a musician, and she established the Roturua Maori Choir, which was consisted of about 40 members of her family. And they traveled to Sydney, Australia on tour in 1910. And then they did really, really well. And so then they went to London in 1911. And this also sort of acted as a Maori cultural tour. And they brought many artifacts with them. And they were quite successful, but then they had some financial problems. And about half of the troops stayed in England, and then the other half went back to New Zealand. And they kind of blamed Maggie for the financial problems. But anyway, so while she was on tour, she met Richard Staples Brown in 1907. And when it all sort of fell apart, she returned to New Zealand, but then after came back to England, and then they continued their courtship, and they got married in 1912. And during World War I, they had two homes, and they opened them up to injured New Zealand troops and helping them out. And then she even installed a memorial to fallen Australian and New Zealand Army Corps soldiers in the chapel at Oddington. So she was also just a lovely person. And then she moved to Oxford in 1924, and she started a Bachelor of Science degree in anthropology. And so while she was there, she wrote a thesis on Maori culture, and she practiced very good anthropology, and she took it back and showed it to the elders at Wakarewa and received approval before submitting it. And unfortunately, she died very suddenly from a ruptured aortic artery just 3 weeks before her thesis examination on April 16th, 1930, which is really sad. But her friend T.K. Penniman at Oxford, who's also an anthropology student, published her thesis as The Old Time Maori Posthumously, and it's a really great anthropological work, and it describes Te Arawa life and customs from a woman's perspective, with chapters titled Social Organization and Relationship Terms, Marriage, Children, Food, Fire, Houses, and Weapons. And, of course, many of these subjects before were, of course, ignored by many male anthropologists. And so it's really important in that sense. And in the marriage chapter, she talks a lot about interracial marriages because of, you know, both her and her parents experienced that. And she was a really intelligent woman, and she really took advantage of the gendered conventions of late Victorian travel culture. And in a world that was not really created for Indigenous people, she really lived a life that fully celebrated her Maori culture and lived that even in Britain and places like that. So I thought she was very cool, very intelligent, and just a pretty important anthropologist in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
I had actually never heard of her, though. Super cool.
Yeah, that was all very new to me, too.
And all of her books are, like, available to, like, they're all published and available to read and stuff still.
Yeah, well, so the old-time Maori was actually re-published by, I want to say, women's something. But yeah, it was republished later on as well, and it is still available now. I don't know about the other one, The Guide to the Hot Lakes. So actually, I just looked it up. So The Old Time Maori is actually available on Amazon. Don't support Amazon and buy it from Amazon, but that just shows that it is still available. So it is out there, but don't buy from Amazon. Anyway, yes, and so yes, you continue on, please.
So, I picked a British person. I think she's very important to anthropology, and I love her a lot. So, I really wanted to talk about Jane Goodall, who I think most people have heard of, but like other anthropologists, I think even if you have heard of them and you're not within the field, you probably don't know a lot about them. And I just wanted to talk about her because she really was a pioneer within the field of primatology, which we haven't really talked much about yet. Primatology is a subset within anthropology that focuses on our primate cousins. And a lot of it has been kind of focused on how we are similar to or different from other primates. And from what I've noticed in the limited primatology I've studied, it is very like human focused. So we like are comparing them to us and not really primates themselves as like just a separate field of interest, but which I don't know, that's kind of an issue, but it is an interesting field of study within anthropology, and it didn't really become much of a thing until Jane Goodall. She was the first person to ever study chimpanzees up close and for an extended period of time. And the way this happened was really interesting because she never had a formal education in any kind of zoology or primatology or anthropology. She was just really interested in animals, and she was working at as a secretary, and she had heard of Louis Leakey, who's a very, very famous anthropologist and paleontologist, along with his wife, Mary Leakey. They're kind of like the king and queen of anthropology, or I guess ancient hominins. And their son, I think, is also an anthropologist now, right?
Yeah.
So they're this big anthropology family, and she wanted to call Louis Leakey and ask him to talk to her about animals, just to have a conversation with him. And I guess he realized how interested she was and asked her to become his secretary. And while she was working for him, he was kind of putting together this field study project in what is now Tanzania. So he ends up sending her to Olduvai Gorge, and there she becomes the first person to observe chimpanzees in the wild. And what I found funny is we knew so little about them that she was completely not afraid of them. Like, now you would be too scared to go near a chimp because they can be very, very, very dangerous. They could rip your head off. But they didn't know that at the time. So it took her a long time, but she actually got the animals to start kind of bonding with her and not be afraid to like do their thing around her. And that made it so she could get a lot of insight that nobody else was able to before. So she went there in 1960, started doing her research, and she discovered that chimpanzees actually make and use tools, which was not something that we knew about in the past. And within anthropology, there's like distinctions between primates or non-human primates and humans. And those are some physiological aspects, but also mostly behavioral. And one of the things that people used to say was that humans are the only ones that can make tools. So this really changed the definition of what we see as human, and it was a huge discovery. Following that, she made a few other discoveries about chimpanzees, like that they hunt large mammals. They also have a lot of socialization within their groups that she learned about. And she discovered that they possessed like emotions, which I think now talking about that, it's like normal known things about chimps. But at the time, these were huge discoveries. And one more thing about Jane Goodall. Oh wait, two things. So first of all, she never studied anthropology, but because of the work she did, she actually got a grant from National Geographic and in 1995, in that same year, Louis Leakey got her a PhD from Cambridge. He basically advocated for her to be able to do that. And she's the eighth person who's ever been able to get a PhD there without having done a bachelor or master's degree.
Wow.
Yeah, so she got money from National Geographic and she was able to keep working in Gombe, which is the area she was in. And eventually, because the population of chimps within Africa had decreased so much that they had become endangered, she decided that her energy was better spent in conservation. And up until this day, she's 86, she started the Jane Goodall Institute, and they advocate for chimpanzees and chimpanzee conservation. So if you would like to look into the Jane Goodall Institute, I'd recommend it. They take donations. Yeah, I just think she's really cool, and she has the kind of initiative I wish I had. Anyway, also, there's a really great documentary from 2017. It's on Netflix right now. I think it's called Just Jane, and it takes video from her time, her early years in Gombe, puts it together, and, like, kind of tells her story better than I could.
Have you watched it?
Yeah, I have. I've watched it a few times. Cool. She's just so cool. I love her so much.
I saw she came to Calgary and I saw a presentation that she did. She's a really good speaker. She's very engaging, and she definitely, I left that. I went to see it with my sister and I left that presentation being like, just thinking, I need to do more for the environment, for chimps, for primates, not even primates in general. It was a very inspiring speech, for sure, presentation.
I can't believe you saw her in person. That's really cool.
It was awesome, yeah.
I didn't even know she was here. Now I'm kind of bummed. She also wrote, like, children's books, and she's been reading them on Instagram for kids who are, like, quarantined.
Oh, really?
She's just the sweetest.
Oh, it's so cute.
Also, the 50th anniversary... Oh, no, sorry. 60th. The 60th anniversary of the Gombe project just happened, because I think they started July 14th, 1960.
These have been some really interesting women in anthropology that we've already had the awesome opportunity to learn about.
And you are going to talk about who?
So, yes, you guys have talked more about two female anthropologists that have kind of made an influence and have been making waves in the field in the past, and I want to talk a little bit about someone who's sort of making waves in the more recent anthropological world, and that is Dr. Alexandra Jones. So she is the real-life Indiana Jones that I want, or hope by the end of this, that our listeners will think of as Dr. Jones instead of maybe, you know, the old white guy who was played in the fictional character Indiana Jones. Instead, sort of. She is a what?
I was just going to say, instead of the sort of misogynistic racist Jones that we often think about.
Exactly. So yeah, let's think about this Dr. Jones, the awesome Dr. Alexandra Jones. And she is a female black archaeologist who has been quoted, and she is celebrated as a woman in STEM, as well as by Travelblazers. So she is an archaeologist and an educator, and her career has been super inspiring to me, and her community outreach work has just been phenomenal, and I can only hope to one day have work as sort of meaningful and impactful as what it seems her work has done. So hopefully by the end of this, I want to tell you a little bit about her life and her stories. So she's an archaeologist and entrepreneur, and she actually created the Washington, D.C.-based organization called Archaeology in the Community in 2009. And as of current, she's an adjunct professor at the University of Baltimore. So a little bit about her. She attended Howard University, which is in Washington, D.C., earning 2 Bachelor of Arts degrees simultaneously in history as well as anthropology in 2001. And then she stayed as well at Howard University and got a Master of Arts in history in 2003. She then continued on and earned a PhD in historical archaeology from the University of California in Berkeley. So for her PhD, she, during this time, it was required for the students in her program to participate in a community outreach project. And her participation involved working with the local school and actually teaching archaeology to 6th grade students. I thought this was particularly interesting because that sort of aligns with, in my graduate career, I've also had the opportunity to work in schools and do community outreach with students. And it's been such a meaningful and impactful experience. And it seems it was for Dr. Jones as well. So when her project was completed, she asked her community service advisor for permission to conduct the next year's project back in her hometown in Washington. So she was given funds to do this community outreach and continue the activity she had started in her PhD, but back home on the East Coast. And this experience then inspired her to create the business that she then founded, Archaeology in the Community, which she founded in 2009. So in this organization, she actually works with schools in Washington, D.C. and throughout Maryland in conducting education programs in archaeology. So she also works with undergrad students, but primarily elementary and secondary students who are interested in archaeology to encourage an interest in understanding of history in the past. So she is the CEO of this company that she actually created and founded. And she's really dedicated to just educating the public about archaeology. What I found really awesome about her, I love to meet her. She seems really cool. She was asked in an interview with the PBS documentary, if you could have any tool, what would it be? And she responded that as an archaeology educator, I don't need any one tool. I just need my imagination. Archaeology is a study of human culture through the objects, places, and spaces. As long as I have my imagination, I can teach anyone about archaeology in any environment, end quote. I think that's just really amazing and really powerful to think about, just that you do, imagination is such an integral aspect of archaeology. It's hard to conceptualize and imagine what the past was like, but these material culture and these objects allow us a little bit of a closer understanding of the past, and just our imagination helps us bridge that gap a little bit better. So I think that's just a really awesome quote from her. So she's done archaeological research projects involving historic as well as prehistoric resources, and this has been throughout the United States. So she has a leadership role and has searched for ancient artifacts, even at one site that explorers once believed to be a city made of gold. Yeah, she's researched civilizations rumored to have been run by lavish female elites, as well as dug and done archaeological work to find insights into the lives of enslaved peoples at a private 17th century mansion with Civil War ties. So her research and outreach has been extremely diverse, and truly the adventures she leads are larger than life and definitely debatably larger than some of the other Dr. Jones's adventures. So, and she's introduced it to just a whole new generation of people and students through the wonders of archaeology and through these really diverse hands-on learning experiences throughout the United States. Another quote from her is that she states that, I enjoy finding out about things that we don't know yet. What we truly need for this profession is imagination.
So a big focus on that.
Yeah. So she seems to really inspire a lot of students with new ideas. She's even been done a dig through her community work in New Mexico, as well as been featured on PBS's Time Team. So where she dug a site with First Nations or Native American artifacts. They found ceramic nails and pottery. And she's just been really inspiring. And it's interesting to me that her career path wasn't always as directed and sort of focused in the beginning. So when she actually began her undergraduate degree, she was studying to be a doctor, but apparently she couldn't quite conquer biology. But she didn't let that stop her, and then that's when she began pursuing history and anthropology, and that's clearly what she excelled in. Aren't we glad she made that choice to switch?
Yeah, really found her passion, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So she found her passion, and now she's been inspiring young students to help them also rediscover the past and new narratives and new ways of looking at the past. So she's a field school director, she's promoted in media, she runs this amazing program, she teaches, she's just really amazing. So I would definitely encourage you to continue to check out her work. Her project, Archaeology in Community, is available online at archaeologyincommunity.com. They're even holding, I thought this was pretty cool, but a virtual archaeology summer camp that's running from late July into August. I know, I want to check it out. It looks pretty darn cool. So I would definitely recommend checking out her work. She's such an inspiring person. She's doing so much interesting things regarding archaeology outreach and education. So that was who I chose to write about. She just seems really cool, really badass, and very exciting.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was just thinking, I wish that she came to my grade 6 class to talk about archaeology. Man.
I was just going to say, I think, like, it's really cool that we have this new focus on, like, public outreach and that it is being pioneered by a lot of minorities and, like, really reaching out to, especially the work that Kelsey was doing, like, reaching out to more Indigenous peoples and trying to encourage them to, like, get into archaeology. Because, like, what's the point of what we do if we can't share it?
Exactly. Having more voices helps create a more holistic understanding of the narrative of the past, and to help bring voice to some of those more silenced voices in the past, and can help, like, bring whole new perspectives and influences to the discipline. I think it's just super important moving forward.
Yeah. And I think, like, Macaretti is sort of an example of that, too. Like, where her book focused on a lot of these sides of Maori culture that were so ignored for so long by many of the male anthropologists and people that didn't, weren't part of the culture or didn't really understand it. And so, yeah, it's just that prime example of having, and we've said this a million times before, but having those voices included not only helps anthropology and gives it a way more comprehensive understanding, but it's generally just a great thing. And there are amazing people like these amazing women that we talked about today that are really, yeah, are really pioneering that and really leading the charge, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah. It's really inspiring to see. And I'm glad that it's, well, I guess it's been happening a little bit in the past, but that it's happening even more so now. It's very exciting and inspiring to see.
Yeah, one other anthropologist that I came across in my little research for this that I hadn't heard of today, just, I'm not going to talk too much about her, but is another current anthropologist who is, and her name is Janetta Betch-Cole. And not just to focus on her accomplishments, because that's not always, like, that's not necessarily her most important qualities. However, she started university at the age of 15.
Holy!
Yeah, at Fisk University, which is a historically black college, and then transferred to Oberlin College in Ohio, and completed a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology. But she then got her Master of Arts and then Doctor of Philosophy degrees in anthropology at Northwestern University. And then she did dissertation field research in Liberia, in West Africa. And she was the first Black president of Spelman College, which is, by the way, a Black college. So the fact that she was the first Black president is very disturbing. However, that was in 1987 to 1999. Then she was the president of Bennett College from 2002 to 2007, and then the director of the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of African Art from 2009 to 2017. So that is just a very quick insight into her, but just another very amazing female Black anthropologist to look up for you all to do your own research as our listeners, because we know you love to learn, which is why you're listening to this podcast, so you can look into that in your own time. But yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, so that was a quick little dive into some very cool female anthropologists, because we are them. We want to put more focus on them, and they're doing really amazing things, and there isn't always enough focus on women in anthropology. And we're going to continue that with our interviews that we're going to be releasing. And so look forward to those. And we're going to be releasing those while Kelsey is off doing her awesome archaeological work up north. Okay, yeah, so we'll be releasing those. So look out for those. And otherwise, thank you for listening. And as always, all of our references and links will be posted on pertainingtopeople.com. You can follow our Instagram, pertainingtopeople, @pertainingtopeople, and our Twitter, @p2peoplepod. And yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.